I know that it won't surprise some of you if I tell you that each year at this time, I get calls from rabbis, from congregants, sometimes from the news media, asking me what I don't believe. But every now and then, I get a call, as I did twice this year, from people who said their rabbis wanted to know what I do believe. And I thought, what a wonderful thing to talk about. Because after all, you're here. And although rabbis sometimes hide behind the cloak of saying what Judaism says, what Judaism teaches, the truth is that, to be honest, you have the right to ask a rabbi, what do you believe? What do you think Judaism is about? And that's really what I want to speak to you about this morning. Coming off the Seder, I want to tell you what I really believe Judaism is about and what I really believe Judaism teaches, because I know that for some, what Judaism is a set of rules, and you judge your quality as a Jew by the number of rules in that set that you fulfill. And each failure to fulfill a rule is a slight demotion in your status as a Jew or as a child of God. And I think that that's entirely too static, too mechanic, even too ritualistic a picture of our tradition. And I'd like to offer you a different way to think about Judaism, or, to be perfectly honest, I'd like to offer you the way that over many, many years, in many different settings, studying with rabbis of all different types and descriptions, the way that I have come to think and to believe. And I want to start with questions. Two questions. The first question that God asks human beings, and the first question that human beings ask God. The first question that God asks human beings is, of course, Ayeka, where are you? And by the way, this has a beautiful parallel in the first question that Moses asks of God, which we read in our story, of course, building up to Pesach. When God says to Moses, I want you to go to Pharaoh, do you know what Moses says? Who am I? Now imagine, if you're in Moses' place and God comes to you and you can ask God anything, what would you ask? What would be the question that you would ask of the Kadosh Baruch Hu, of God, when God comes out of the sky into a bush and says, I am here, and then Moses gets the chance to ask. And Moses' first question is, who am I? Before Moses even asks, what am I supposed to do? He asks the same question that God asks of Adam. Ayeka, where are you? Because where am I and who am I, they are in some sense the same. Inside of myself, where am I? Because we know that's what God was asking of Adam. He wasn't asking, where are you located geographically? Everybody knew Adam was in the Garden of Eden. What Adam says is, I was scared, so I was hiding. In other words, God, if you ask me where I am, I'm in a place of hiding, a place of fear. And when Moses says, who am I? God doesn't say, oh, you're Moses, and you grew up in the palace of the Pharaoh, and now you're in Midian. No. Moses says, who am I that I should go to Pharaoh? And God says, I will be with you. So the first step to a Judaism that is dynamic, a Judaism of relationship, a Judaism that is covenantal, a Judaism in which I believe is to realize that God wants us to know something about ourselves. That self-awareness is not a catchword. It's not psychobabble. It wasn't invented in the 20th century. And it's not only for people who go on Oprah. It's real. If you're given a soul, you're supposed to spend your life exploring that soul because it is limitless. And the first answer to the question, who am I, is God's answer. I will be with you, Ehyeh Imach. Which is to say, who am I? I'm somebody who can walk with God in this world. I am not alone. And that's the beginning, but only the beginning. Of a Judaism that is built out of the teachings of the Torah. Because if you stay inside yourself, if you do that, then you've missed the central teaching of the Torah, which is that we are here for a purpose, for a destiny. Remember what God says to Elijah when Elijah goes off to the mountain. Elijah's on the mountain and God says, "What are you doing here?" And Elijah says, "Your people aren't good enough. They've rejected you." And God says, "Go back. The reason you opened the door for Elijah last night was God gave him a mission. It wasn't enough for Elijah to be alone on a mountaintop. We don't believe in people living their lives on mountaintops. We don't believe in people living their lives of meditation where they only explore the nuances and the inside of their own soul. What you must do is explained in the central incident, even though it's a small incident in some ways, of the Exodus story. Without this, the story would never have happened. We learned what Moses' first question is, but what's the first story about Moses? He's placed in a basket by the river. And Pharaoh's daughter walks down to the river. And she takes the covering off the basket and it says, "Vihine na'ar boche," and behold, a child crying. Now why behold? As you can tell from the sanctuary this morning, usually when a child cries, you hear the child, you don't see the child. So why behold a child crying? Because what Pharaoh's daughter did was she looked into his face. And that's what Judaism teaches. That a panim, a face, is the image of God in this world. And that when you see another human being, when you really see them, when you look into their face, that is a sacred act. That's our task. To see someone. To see them when they grieve. To see them when they rejoice. To see them when they ask a question. To see them when they want to run away. Somebody who tells you that Judaism is about rules and it's not about faces doesn't understand Judaism. Have you ever had that experience? You're hidden behind a screen or a newspaper or a book, or you're looking off into space and then all of a sudden you raise your eyes and you look at a face. And you can be startled by the intensity of what you see. And you can imagine what Pharaoh's daughter went through when she pulled back the blanket on that basket and she saw a face. And in spite of her upbringing and her training and her father and everything she had learned, she saved that child because she saw him. You know that in the temple, as we prayed about this morning, the central act is called a korban, a sacrifice. But what does it mean, likarev? It means to draw close. And even there, even at a time when sacrifice was the most important thing in our tradition, when it was the way that people prayed and the way they related to God, what does the prophet tell us? Chesed chafatzdi velo zevach. What I want from you is kindness, not sacrifice. In other words, I want you to see each other's faces. I've had this experience, as have you. You look at somebody and you ask them for help, and sometimes you see each other. And they help. Or you look at somebody and you ask for help and you feel they don't see you. And they don't help. And they turn away. In that moment, in the moment when you speak to each other, that's the moment of mitzvah. And if you ask me, and I am just speaking for me, if you ask me who had a more kosher Seder, people who made sure that every single crumb of chametz was gone from their house but didn't speak to each other in the course of the Seder, or people who may unwittingly have left a few crumbs in the couch that they didn't beat the cushions of, but they laughed together and they sang together and they told stories and they remembered our past and they dreamed about our future and they listened to a child recite the Manishtana and they looked at her face. All I can tell you is in any Judaism that I can believe in, the second Seder is the kind of Seder that I want. A Seder of faces. And by faces, I don't mean perfect faces. I don't mean beautiful faces. I don't mean what the world calls model faces. As the poet John Masefield wrote, I have seen flowers grow in stony places and kind things done by men with ugly faces. And the gold cup won by the worst horse at the races, so I trust too. Every face is an image of God, not only faces that go on billboards. We don't know what Moses looked like. We're not told that he was tall and handsome. We just know how Moses lived. We just know what Moses saw, which is the faces of the Jewish people. Which is why when he left the palace of Pharaoh and went out into Egypt, he didn't see the pyramids. He didn't see the buildings. He saw suffering. Because Moses wasn't taken in by grandeur. Moses saw faces. You know, sometimes we think that Judaism is unaffected by the world around it, but the truth is we've changed a great deal in response to our world. The architecture of our synagogue, some of our forms of prayer, some of the melodies that we sing, even some of the words of our hymns, all of them have been influenced not only by the world, but by the cultures that we've passed through. Maimonides writes his great book of philosophy in Arabic, not in Hebrew. The Talmud is written in Aramaic, which was a Babylonian language originally, not a Jewish language. We're profoundly influenced by the religions and by the people with whom we come in contact. But I want to tell you something that, as far as I know, no Jewish community ever did. We never asked people to wear veils. We never said, cover your face. because we know that the face is the image of God. And it is an insult in our tradition, not only to human beings, but to God, to say to a human being, you must cover your face. And that is emphasized by the times that we do ask someone to cover a face. When do we do this? We do this at the wedding. And sometimes when someone is in mourning, they'll cover their face or they'll cover the mirrors in their house so they can't see their face. And why do we do that? At the wedding, you veil your face so that you can uncover it. So that at the moment you are married, you pick up the veil as if to say, this is who I am. This is the person you have married. I reveal myself fully to you because from now on we are pledged together for the rest of our lives. And why do you cover a mirror or cover your face in mourning? Because God's image has been diminished in this world when someone dies. Because that's what a face of a human being is, an image of God. And you have to start with that. The rabbis say in the Talmud, when a human king stamps a coin, and then stamps another and another, every coin looks exactly the same. But when the King of Kings, the Kadosh Baruch Hu, when God stamps face after face after face, every face is different. Everyone unique. Everyone a special image of God. The mitzvot in our tradition are the language that we speak to one another. There are means of creating community, but they are not an end in themselves. They are so that we can realize the image of God in this world, so that we can draw together. And in order to demonstrate this, I return again to where I began. What do we learn about Moses? Moses is, after all, the central figure of the Jewish tradition. Moses is the one who goes up to Sinai and receives the Torah from God. Moses is the one who leads the Israelites through the desert. Moses is called Moshe Rabbeinu, Moses our teacher. And when Moses dies, what does the Torah tell us about him? It does not say Moses observed more mitzvot than anyone who ever lived. It doesn't say Moses was the one who went up to Sinai. It says Moses saw God panim el panim, face to face. It doesn't literally mean God's face. It means that Moses had the most intimate, comprehensive relationship with God. That Moses' Judaism was a Judaism of relationship. That Moses' korban was a korban of drawing close. That what you experienced last night, if your Seder was what I hope it was for all of you, that was what our tradition is all about. Remember that the pinnacle of our history is when the Messiah comes. And last night we opened the door for Elijah to announce the coming of the Messiah. And the prophet Malachi tells us what will happen when the Messiah comes. And you know what Malachi says? He doesn't say the world's going to be perfect. He doesn't say no one will ever get upset. Malachi says, "Veheshiv levavot al banim velev banim al avotam." I will turn the hearts of parents to children and the hearts of children to their parents. In other words, I will create a world in which a family experiences a relationship of love. anyone whose Judaism is not based on the vision of Malachi, all I can say is their Judaism is not my Judaism. I believe in Malachi, and I believe in the vision of Moses, and I believe in what I've seen again and again and again, which is that somebody who is preoccupied or who is angry or who is distant will look up and see an image of God, in other words, a human face, and they will be reminded that that's where everything begins. I want to close by telling you something remarkable, part of which you know and part of which you may not have considered. You know the story in the Talmud where somebody who's thinking about converting to Judaism comes to Shammai and says, "Give me all of the Torah on one foot." And Shammai says, "Get out of my house." Chases him away. Is angry. Doesn't see him. And the same man comes to Hillel. And Hillel says to him, "That which is hateful to you, don't do to someone else." That, says Hillel, is the whole of Torah. The rest is commentary. Now go and learn. We teach this story to first graders. It's one of the first stories about Judaism and about the rabbis that children learn. But something you might never have thought of before is Hillel says that's the whole of Torah. But guess what? That's nowhere in the Torah. It's nowhere in the Torah. How can Hillel say that's the whole of Torah when it isn't even mentioned in the Torah? Nowhere in the Torah does it say that which is hateful to you, don't do to someone else. Now, Hillel is not here to tell us, but on his behalf, I'm going to make a guess. Where did Hillel get that? Remember where that convert had just come. He'd just come from Shammai. And Shammai had chased him away, and he was probably upset, and he was probably angry, and he came into Hillel's like this. But Hillel saw his face. And so Hillel spoke to that man, but also to all of us. And he said, "See who comes before you. That's the whole of Torah. Look into his face, into her face." That's what Moses did. That's what Pharaoh's daughter did. That's what God did with Adam in the Garden of Eden. If someone should ask you, "What does your rabbi believe in?" Tell them he believes in faces. He believes that all of us should aspire to what Moses did, which is to see each other and God panim el panim. And then I hope, but this is up to you, I hope you'll say, "And that's what I believe too." Chag Sameach.